Wondery Plus subscribers can binge all 7 episodes of Frozen Head ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Ash.
Yes, Elena.
What's going to happen to you when you die?
I am going to have my ashes scattered somewhere beautiful. I don't really know quite where yet, but somewhere beautiful.
Okay, I love that for you.
Thanks.
I want a big, crazy lady mausoleum. But what I actually meant was, what happens to you after you die?
Oh, you mean the big question. Like, is there some part of me that stays around?
Right. Like, when you die, are you gone or...
Oh, like you mean, am I going to haunt you?
Yeah, because I am definitely going to haunt you.
Oh, I know. I know.
But jokes aside, we're all going to die. And that question of what happens to us after, it's the greatest mystery of all. But it can also be the question that sometimes takes over what we do with the life we're given.
Which brings us to the story of a 90-year-old man named Lawrence Pilgrim, laying face down in the grass outside his condo.
Ooh, story time.
Friday, April 10th, 2015, began like any other day in Encina Royale, a retirement community outside of Santa Barbara, California. The residents walked their dogs and tended their gardens. Some played canasta at the clubhouse.
Does anything say retirement quite like canasta? Please tell me there's also shuffleboard.
It was a warm and sunny day. Perfect weather to get out and play a round at the golf course. What? Lawrence Pilgrim had lived here for more than 3 decades, and he'd fallen into a pretty solitary routine. He liked to take his showers at the pool clubhouse. It kept his water bill low. He preferred to eat in the hospital cafeteria, for much the same reason.
It's cheap.
But on this day in April, Lawrence comes home from dinner, parks in the carport, takes a few steps, and drops down dead.
Well, that just took a dark turn.
A neighbor spotted him lying in the grass, just off the sidewalk, just after 6 p.m., and called 911. Lawrence had always wondered, what happens in that instant when life ends? Now he knew. Lawrence had been fit. He didn't drink or smoke, but a sudden cardiac arrest did him in. There was no foul play, nothing unusual at the scene. It was just a natural death.
Minus the face plant on concrete and grass, it's pretty much the best kind of death you could hope for. 90 long, successful years, and then boom, you're dead.
Except that's not how Lawrence saw it. For Lawrence and others like him, death is not the end. This is a story about the fight for a second chance, a chance for resurrection, for a redo, for reanimation. It's an obsession, one that would play out like a soap opera over multiple generations involving multiple families. An obsession that would cause a lot of trouble, not just in life, but after death, too.
He had asked her out of the blue, what do you think of cryonics?
That was his goal, to have his whole body preserved and sometime in the future brought back.
He's hearing this conversation and he says, stop talking about that bullshit.
I don't see a scenario where they're going to forget the name Pilgrim anytime soon. That's for sure.
People say, well, dead is dead. Is it a lot more complex than that?
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
From Wondery, I'm Elena.
And I'm Ash. And this is Frozen Head. Ash, this is a special series for us. On our weekly show, Morbid, when we tell stories about someone who died, we usually focus on what happened to them. How did they die? Were they killed? Who murdered them?
Right. It's the stuff that leads up to death, the twists and turns and the last moments of life that we typically focus on.
Exactly. But in this story, we're more interested in the twists and turns that happen after death and the ways that one person's last wish can turn out to be another's curse. It's a story that turns husbands against wives, brothers against brothers, in-laws against in-laws, sons against fathers.
And there are turtles, grenades, human antifreeze, gold coins, and frozen heads.
Lots of frozen heads. This is episode 1, Mother Melters. We're going to spend plenty of time with Lawrence Pilgrim in this series, but we're starting in a different time, in a different place, with a kid and his deepest fear.
As early as I can remember, I was terrified and disgusted at the idea of death.
Mike Federowitz traces that fear back to one specific horrible moment. It was back in the 60s when he was about 7 or 8. He's out in his neighborhood near downtown Indianapolis. It's the middle of a sticky summer day, and he passes by his cousin's house.
She lived just a couple blocks down the street from us, and she was very close to me.
Mike's cousin was much older than him, an old woman, so more like an aunt or a grandmother even, but they shared a special bond.
She would do things that my parents wouldn't do for me, like buy me a chemistry set.
But on this day, when he's passing her house, he notices something strange.
In those days, milk and newspapers were both delivered, and it was all stacked up outside her front door.
Mike's a curious kid, and he's wondering why his cousin hasn't brought in the milk or newspapers. He rings the doorbell.
And?
No answer. Now he's getting alarmed, so he walks around the side of the house.
The kitchen light was on, and so being the kind of person I was wont to do, I popped the screen on the back window and went in.
He enters through the kitchen window. The house is eerily quiet. And then it hits him. The smell. He sees the door to the bathroom is open, so he goes over. And there is his cousin.
Oh, God. She's dead, isn't she?
Not only is she dead, but it looks like she's been dead for a while.
It had been about a week, and she was just bloated and discolored, and her tongue was, protruding from her mouth, and she was badly decomposed.
Look, I'm an autopsy technician. I've seen some badly decomposed bodies in my day, and I cannot imagine how traumatic that is to walk in on as a child.
Seriously, that poor kid.
They took her out on a gurney covered in velour, velvet type things that they did. And that was the end of her.
And that image of his cousin dead in the bathroom would stick with him.
that gave me a real clear view of what death was. And I didn't like it. And I still don't.
Here's where Mike is a little different from other kids. He sees death as a problem, but one that maybe has a solution. So he asks big questions. Why do we die? What happens to us afterwards? And how might we stop that? And even though he attends Catholic school, he's not asking it like, do we go to heaven? For Mike, it's science, not the Bible, that has the answers. His beliefs don't earn him a lot of friends, but they do get him a nickname.
My cohorts, my critical cohorts, started calling me Dr. Darwin or Mr. Darwin to mock me.
Like Charles Darwin, the descent of man, the guy who created the theory of evolution.
Because, you know, that was outrageous and vaguely evil and certainly not good Catholicism.
But Mike doesn't have time for the haters. He's focused on this one particular problem.
I got very interested in trying to preserve animals, like dead birds.
Mike would be out and see a dead bird in the street or in a yard, and he would take it home where he had his makeshift lab set up.
And so I was doing things like, you know, immersing animals in isopropyl alcohol and injecting them with it.
He is trying to stop the thing he'd seen happen to his cousin.
Not interested in death, but interested in how to stop it, how to stop decomposition.
He did this over and over, mostly with his dead pets, turtles, guinea pigs. Mike would inject them with a preservant and see how long he could keep them from decomposing. Spoiler alert, it's not long. Then he gets bolder. He starts freezing his pet turtles to see if he can stop their heartbeats and their breathing, and then bring them back to life.
Oh my God, how is he getting permission to do this?
It was a different time. Turtles didn't have the same rights.
That was something that was no one else that I knew could do. And while I couldn't do it well, there was a great feeling of satisfaction and empowerment about that.
Then one day, he gets an exciting opportunity to share what he's been up to in his home laboratory.
I did this science fair project, and so I had this poster on suspended animation. I explained the turtles I was freezing and, you know, all the other experiments that I had done on plants.
A teacher pulls Mike to the side.
She said, well, listen, this is really interesting what you've done. Did you know they're freezing people? They're freezing people in California. And I said, what do you mean? She said, oh, they're freezing them to bring them back to life.
It's the first time Mike has heard about cryonics.
Okay, so what is cryonics?
Basically freezing and storing people until they can be revived at some point in the future.
What? Is that possible?
No.
Oh.
It's not possible now, but cryonicists believe that at some point in the future, it will be. And they're freezing people after they've died or deanimated until it is. At the time, this new science, if you can call it that, was really starting to take off. It even spawns a few urban legends, like that Walt Disney was frozen after he died.
He's not.
He's not. And he's not stored under the Pirates of the Caribbean ride either.
Boo.
But the cryonicists are starting to freeze people. And naturally, Mike is intrigued. He starts devouring anything he can get his hands on about cryonics. He reads articles that speculate about the future. Medicine will find a cure for cancer, for heart disease, and people could potentially live indefinitely.
So once I understood that, I was on fire. I mean, it just was a consuming passion to learn everything I could about it.
And from there, things start to fall into place. In just a few years, Mike is invited to help preserve his first human being. He meets other cryonicists. He does more research. No turtles this time. And he also takes on a new identity for his life in cryonics. Mike Darwin.
It's like he takes that name he was teased with as a kid and owns it.
And I like the name, and it just stuck.
And Mike Darwin finds his community in more ways than one.
I was gay in Indiana and got involved in cryonics when I was a kid, before I even knew what homosexuality was.
Cryonicists tended to be outsiders, and that suits Mike Darwin just fine.
It was an outsider undertaking, and you're going to find people who just don't accept authority because they've been told that they're no good, that they're evil, and they don't believe that, so they no longer trust the received wisdom of the culture. They march to the sound of their own drummer.
It's fun, it's exciting, and it's all about to go horribly wrong.
Frozen Head is supported by Modern Fertility. For a lot of us, the new year feels like a good time to check in health-wise. But I do have to wonder how many of us forget about our reproductive health. That's why Modern Fertility was created. With a simple finger prick, you can easily test your fertility hormones at home. And within just 6 business days, you'll get detailed insight into your hormone levels and other factors that can impact your fertility. Traditional hormone testing at a fertility clinic can cost over $600, but Modern Fertility tests the same general set of hormones for only $179. And if you go to modernfertility.com/frozenhead, you can even get another $20 off. Plus, you can get reimbursed for the test through your FSA or HSA. If you want kids today, or maybe one day in the future, clinically sound information about your body can help you make the decision that's right for you. And right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/frozenhead. That means your test will cost $159, which is a fraction of what it would cost at a fertility clinic. Get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/frozenhead. modernfertility.com/frozenhead. Frozen Head is sponsored by BetterHelp. I always feel my best when I focus on my physical and my mental well-being. But sometimes that's easier said than done. And when life gets overwhelming, it can be really hard to show up in the way that I want to, for myself and for other people. If you can relate, something that can help you get back on track is working with a therapist. Because when you feel empowered, you're more prepared to take on anything life throws at you. Personally, I freaking love therapy. I feel like I have had so much growth as a human being through my therapy journey that it's taught me just so much about the ins and outs of life and how to navigate tough situations or great situations. Like, take a step back, high five myself, you know? So if you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. If things aren't clicking, it's easy to switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. How great is that? If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/frozenhead today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/frozenhead.
By December 1987, Mike Darwin is in charge of an organization dedicated to cryonics, Alcor Life Extension Foundation.
Alcor? It sounds like a brand of canned tuna fish.
You might be thinking of albacore.
Ah.
Yeah, but Alcor is the name of a star, light years away from our galaxy. They chose the name to represent how far we'll have to go to make reviving the dead a reality. It's a sci-fi name, a hopeful name, because for cryonicists, that's what this all represents. Hope for a time in the future when the diseases that people die of today will be a thing of the past.
Seems a little far out. Like, what are the odds anyone frozen will ever be revived?
They don't seem great, but the cryonicists say, wouldn't you rather be part of the experiment than part of the control? Even if that chance is minuscule, it's better than no chance at all. Anyway, on this day in December, Mike is in Alcor's warehouse in Riverside, California, waiting on a very important arrival. His colleague, Saul Kent, has taken Alcor's secondhand ambulance and is heading to a nursing home a few miles away. He's on a mission to pick up a future patient, someone who is still alive, but barely. This is a high-stakes trip in many ways.
Alcor is still relatively small. The opportunity to preserve someone only comes along every now and then. So when it does, it's an exciting time. But this time, it's also personal. In this nursing home is Saul's mother.
His mother, I believe, was 83 years old at the time, and, you know, she was dying. And she was brought to Alcor.
Max Moore is in his early 20s. Like Mike Darwin before him, a young guy with a passion for cryonics. When the ambulance arrives at Alcor with Dora, Max is put on death watch duty.
She was, you know, in decline, and it was my job basically to observe and let people know if, you know, she took a sudden downturn. I was there for quite a few hours, I think, you know, maybe 8 hours or something.
Max finishes his shift, but while he's taking a break, Dora dies.
The body failed her, as we were expecting it to do, and we began the procedure.
It's preservation time.
Everybody's on, you know, on high alert.
Because after all, they've only done this a handful of times.
It's not like a surgeon who does multiple surgeries a day and everything is, you know, perfectly in place and then it's a very smooth, well, familiar procedure. This is not so much. So I'm sure there's people running around making sure everything was in place, all the supplies were ready.
Things are a little chaotic, you might say. Dora's body is packed in ice on an operating table. For the most part, Max stands to the side and observes.
I was just kind of there as a gopher, basically, you know, to fetch supplies or do what was needed.
They start with a washout.
Let me guess, we're not talking about bathing her.
No, we're definitely not. They empty the body of blood.
Oh, I just had breakfast.
Toughen up, Ash. That's actually pretty normal. Funeral homes do this too. But in cryonics, they use chemicals that are much stronger than embalming fluid.
So we're going to take several hours to remove the blood and gradually increase the concentration of our cryoprotectant solution.
Like human antifreeze?
Pretty much. Then they drill two little holes in the skull and cut off her hands.
What?
Well, they want to see if the preservant spreads all the way through the body. Now it's time for the most important part.
She was a neuro case, so we actually did a neuro separation.
They did a what now?
They cut off her head.
Excuse me?
Rather than preserving the whole body, which is in pretty bad shape, obviously, at that age and with illness, just going to cryopreserve her brain.
But, like, isn't she going to need her body if she ever comes back?
You might think so. But the thinking goes, if you're brought back to life sometime in the future, you're probably not going to want your body in its oldest, most degenerated form. And if the science is good enough to bring you back from the dead, seems like a safe bet that they can give you a new body, too.
Do I dare ask how they removed Dora's head?
With a flexible wire saw made to cut through bone. You place it under the fifth vertebra and then go to town, back and forth until you're all the way through.
Thank you for that.
When they're done, they take the excess skin, fold it over the stump, and staple it in place.
Nice and tidy.
Once Dora's head is removed, they turn to Max.
And said to take it over there to the cooling bucket. So I had her head in my hands and walked over and placed it carefully in there for the cool-down procedure.
Max, bless him, does as he's told and carries that head right over to the bucket. They then begin the process of cooling it down to negative 320 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, that's cold. Like, worse than New England in the dead of winter cold.
They put the rest of Dora's body on ice so they can have it cremated. And Dora Kent becomes Alcor's fifth preservation. Another person with another chance at life. Sometime in the distant future.
It's a very profound event. It's like basically trying to save someone's life.
Okay, but for all the non-cryonicists right now in the present day, Dora is very definitely dead.
And also headless.
And that means having to deal with all the usual formalities that go along with someone dying, like a death certificate. Which is how Mike first meets Alan Koonsman. 5 days after Dora Kent's head was frozen, a government-issued Chevy Celebrity pulls into Alcor's parking lot.
Through the chain-link fence, found a place to park.
A deputy from the coroner's office steps out of the car.
This is straight out of an 80s cop drama right now.
Alan Koonsman is here to investigate the death of an 83-year-old woman.
Ooh, okay. So maybe more like Murder, She Wrote, which honestly is even better.
The day before, two men had brought in a death certificate, asking the coroner's office to sign off on it.
It was very peculiar that you have someone, a civilian, walk in the front door and say, can you sign this death certificate?
The death certificate claimed the woman had died of natural causes, pneumonia and Alzheimer's, and listed this as the address. He looks around. He's standing in front of a warehouse in the middle of an industrial park.
If someone had died at that address, I would have suspected it would have been because of an accident, someone falling off of a ladder, an explosion in one of the workshops or something, and that's not the case here.
So Alan approaches the building.
The windows, the front of the building where the office was located, was all covered with paper. You couldn't see through the windows.
He knocks on the door and then lets himself in. There's a little reception area with a fish tank and a few chairs. There are photographs of people on the wall.
As soon as we walked into this building, I just felt like I was walking into almost an evil place. As an investigator, you use all of your senses. And in this case, you walk in and you feel like this cloud has just fallen on you. I mean, it was a real bizarre feeling.
Alan is greeted by Mike Darwin, one of the two guys who brought in the death certificate. Alan quickly learns he's standing in a cryonics facility.
I'd never run into this before. It just was so bizarre and out of anything that any of us had ever seen.
But Mike is behaving as though this is the most normal thing in the world. He tells Alan, we have Dora Kent here. Oh, and we've removed her head.
Removed her head, because that's a totally normal thing to do.
So Alan asks to see her,
or what's left of her.
We told him we just needed to view the body to make sure there wasn't any bullet holes and hatchets in it.
So Mike shows him to the room where the body is being stored.
I'd been a paramedic in California and a corpsman in the Navy. And to me, it looked like it was some type of a treatment room or an operating room, which was extremely unusual to have in an industrial park location. We walked in, and immediately on the right side of the doorway was a plywood long box. It had heavy visqueen plastic that lined it, and inside was Dora Kent's body covered with ice.
Alan has Mike uncover the body.
So he pulls the visqueen back, kind of moves some of the ice out of the way so we can see that there's a body in there. And immediately see that the body has no head.
Kind of hard to miss.
And then Alan notices it's not just the head that's been cut off.
I look further, they're moving more ice around, and there's no hands.
Mike explains that they're just in the ice chest over there. They'll cremate them with the rest of her remains.
So typically, you would think, oh my God, you know, God, where's this woman's head? Where's her hands? What are you guys doing here? But I had already picked up on the fact that this was going to be an unusual investigation.
Alan tells Mike they need to take Dora in for an autopsy. Mike says, okay, sure. You can take her body. But Alan wants the head too.
And so I said, we'll need to take her head so that we can identify her.
The head is out of the question. If they remove it from its frozen storage, then they can kiss goodbye any chance of bringing Dora back in the future. Alan tries to bargain.
You can come along. You can make sure that, you know, all your protocols are followed so that there's no damage and so on and so forth.
The answer is still no.
They were really determined that the head wasn't going to leave.
Alan goes ahead and calls for the transportation company to come pick up Dora's body. He tells the driver they'll be back for the head. As Alan jumps back into his Chevy Celebrity, he's running through the situation in his head. They have an elderly woman who died in an industrial park, whose head and hands have been removed. The only people who were witness to her death filled out a death certificate and tried to get Alan's office to sign off on how they say she died. And now they're refusing to comply with the coroner's request to examine her head. The whole situation is incredibly suspicious.
If it were me, I would definitely be thinking that they murdered her.
Absolutely. Just over a week after the coroner's office had shown up at Alcor, Mike Darwin is lying flat out on the floor of his office.
I had contracted the flu from Dora Kent.
Turns out, you can catch the flu while cryopreserving someone who had the flu.
And I was lying on a mat on the floor in my office, which is sort of an upstairs loft in the Alcor facility.
And it's through his flu-induced haze he hears a story on the radio about Alcor. There's an interview with the coroner's office.
And he says, "We believe this was homicide, and we intend to prosecute them, each and every one of them, to the full extent of the law, for murdering this woman, for cutting her head off before she was dead."
Mike's jaw drops.
So I hear that, and I say, "This is not good."
Not good, Mike? When you're being accused of killing your friend's mom, not good might be an understatement. And the stories about Dora Kent are everywhere.
Strange story out of Riverside County tonight is called cryonics. It involves freezing a head or a body at 320 degrees below zero in hopes that science will someday figure out a way to bring back the dead.
83-year-old Dora Kent was taken to the Alcor Life Extension firm by her son. There is now concern that Kent wasn't dead before the operation.
But it's not actually the threat of murder charges that has Mike so concerned.
I said, "Look, they're going to come for her head. We had given them her body for autopsy." And I said, "They clearly believe that there was malfeasance here, and it is just a matter of time until they come for her head."
Mike and Alcor face a choice.
We can move her out of the facility and secrete her someplace where they cannot find her, or we can accept the fact that they're going to come for her and surrender her for autopsy.
Hide the head or lose the head, and see all their work, their hopes to see Dora brought back in the future, melt away.
The new year is so exciting. A fresh start, new goals, and just having no idea what adventures are in store for you. Whether you plan on traveling a ton, getting that new job, or just want to pick up a new skill, there's no better way to prepare for 2023 than by learning a new language with Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. Thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy bite-sized language lessons, you can feel confident no matter where the new year takes you. And when I say bite-sized, I literally mean only 10 minutes to complete a lesson. You can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. How's that for motivation? Personally, I'm a user of Babbel and I'm loving it. I specifically think that for some reason, even in school, flashcards were like my thing. So when I saw that they had them on the Babbel app, I was like, "Oh, that's how we're about to learn this French language." And it's really been making a difference for me. But don't even think that it's only limited to French, my friends. Babbel has over 14 languages to choose from. Their lessons were created by over 150 language experts, and they're actually voiced by real native speakers, not computers. That's so important. So start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, get up to 55% off your subscription when you go to babbel.com/frozenhead. That's babbel.com/frozenhead for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life.
Alan Koonsman is gathered with a group of investigators and police officers in the parking lot of a strip mall.
We go over the purpose of why we're there. This is what the search warrant says that we're there for.
Alan makes it clear exactly what they're after.
Dora Kent's head, her hands, videotape, and any documentation surrounding Dora Kent that we could collect and review to make a determination if we could declare that her death was a homicide or a natural death.
Alan is ready to head back to Alcor, this time with a search warrant in hand. And he has no intention of leaving without Dora's head.
We get back this time and the gate's closed. They've got it locked. We can't get in.
But a 6-foot locked gate won't deter Alan.
So myself, one of the detectives, and I think someone else, we climbed the gate, went to the front door.
Climbing the gate is even better than driving a Chevy Celebrity.
And it pays off because someone from Alcor answers the door.
Probably wondering how they got over the gate.
We get in and we serve the search warrant, give them the search warrant, and then they open the gate the other investigators from the police department come in.
They all fan out. They're on the hunt for Dora's head or any evidence of foul play.
We found in one of the cabinets there was some chemicals being stored that were corroded and leaking. So we had to have the fire department come in and secure that.
Then they find something totally unexpected.
I think it was one of the officers, the PD officers, found what at the time we believed to be live grenades and a landmine.
Shit just got realer.
Sure did. Immediately, they clear everyone out of the building and call in the bomb squad.
They come in and determine that the grenades and the landmine are inert. They're not active, and don't worry about them.
They learn that one of the Alcor employees had been in the military and kept them as souvenirs.
I love a good souvenir, but like maybe go for a dog tag or something less explosive next time.
So we move back into the building and we're searching further.
At some point, one of the coroner's detectives has had enough and detains Mike Darwin.
They had me in handcuffs and I said, at what point are you going to read me my rights?
Before they take Mike and the others down to the station, they have Mike call the guy who actually removed Dora's head and tell him, get over here. The police need to speak with you.
I said, they're raiding the facility and they've arrested us. And he said, I'll be there as soon as I can get there.
But that's not what this guy does.
I was smiling inside saying, wherever he is going, it is not here. It is not here. And what he did was, in fact, was to retrieve the $30,000 that we kept as cryopreservation funds in gold as Krugerrands.
Krugerrands? What are they? Pirates? Throwing around gold coins?
So with Krugerrands in tow, he heads to a law office in L.A. in search of a lawyer who could help Alcor.
Said, we've got this problem. He described it. And they were not exactly enthused about taking the case. And so he then poured out the Krugerrands on their desk and said, this is the beginning of what we can pay you. And so they took the case.
Money talks, baby.
Meanwhile, Mike and the others are taken to the police station.
We're now in police custody, meaning we were never physically put behind bars. We were not free to go. We were handcuffed.
And that's when their attorney, who recently came into possession of some Krugerrands, calls up the police.
He said, unless you're going to charge these people right now, you're going to let them go.
So
they just let us go.
But the coroner's office isn't done with their raid at the warehouse. Or Mike.
They wanted me to show them the patients, to take the patients out of liquid nitrogen and show them their heads and bodies. They had no conception of what was involved, right?
Who would?
Mike and the investigators are standing in one of the garage bays in Alcor's warehouse. There's a low freezer with sliding metal doors that looks like the ice machine from an old school motel. There's a trash can, a spare tank of liquid nitrogen. But taking up most of the space are two large concrete cubes labeled caution, biohazard.
Due to my paranoia about earthquakes, the patients were stored in concrete vaults that were about 5 feet on a side.
Inside the concrete vaults are metal canisters that contain the frozen heads of Alcor's neuro patients. Investigators want to see Dora Kent's canister, so they tell Mike to open the vaults. Each of these concrete cubes has a steel lid that weighs several hundred pounds. And Mike is a pretty slender guy. He's wearing shorts and tennis shoes.
Not exactly prepared for heavy weightlifting.
Yeah, not at all. Mike struggles with the lid, so the investigators have to help him. They get it off. There's liquid nitrogen vapor billowing out like they're doing the double-double toil and trouble scene in Macbeth.
And then they wanted me to pull up each patient, neuro patient, in their aluminum canister.
Mike protests. This is dangerous. But they insist.
When I pulled one of the patients out of there, liquid nitrogen was running out from the canister.
The liquid nitrogen drips onto Mike's running shoes and reaches one of Mike's toes.
This was agonizingly painful. And they realized at that point, this is not only dangerous, this guy has really hurt himself. And of course, my foot is smoking from liquid nitrogen, you know, vapor coming off of my foot.
In the end, the investigators do not find what they're looking for.
This was an ordeal that went on to around midnight when they finally just realized that there were limits on what I could do. And so they left.
Empty-handed.
Dora's not there?
Nope.
So where is she?
Good question.
You know where your mother's head is, right?
Less than 2 weeks after the raid at Alcor, Saul Kent sits across from Larry King in his Los Angeles studio.
I have no comment at this time, but due to advice of counsel, but there's no doubt that we want my mother's head to remain preserved.
This is one of those rare nights Larry isn't wearing suspenders. He's in a maroon sweater vest. He leans forward on one elbow as he puts his questions to his guest. Saul sits forward in his chair. He seems both anxious and eager, gesticulating with his hands every time he speaks.
How did this all break? How did we learn of this?
What happened was that my mother was in a nursing home near the Alcor facility where she was to be preserved.
Now, Alcor is the...
Life Extension Foundation that does the preservation of the brain and also...
the freezing process is done.
That's correct.
According to Saul, he did what any responsible son would do in this situation. He moved his mother from the nursing home to Alcor so that when the time came, they would be ready. And then the coroner's department stepped in and tried to ruin it all.
They've done some things that I think are reprehensible. They've staged raids on the Alcor facility.
But Saul tells Larry King's audience, Alcor is not going to let the Riverside coroner's office autopsy his mother.
Well, we can say safely then your mother's head is preserved.
That's correct.
And it is somewhere.
It is somewhere.
Okay, tell me, where is her head?
Actually, Mike says by this time, even he doesn't know. The night he put it to a vote to move Dora Kent's head, it was put in his partner's garage. But after that, he'd gotten paranoid and had someone pick it up and take it somewhere even he wouldn't know.
Wow.
All that matters is that Alcor has Dora Kent's head safe and sound. For now. But they need a long-term solution, a way to ensure that it stays that way. And so Alcor's attorney seeks a permanent restraining order to keep the Riverside Coroner's Office out of their business for good. We should note, Alcor was never charged with criminal conduct.
I still felt strongly that, we were going to prevail in this particular case and was kind of puffing myself up, I guess, to show that when the judge made the ruling and we were going to be able to retrieve the head.
But Alan's confidence drains quickly. Alcor's lawyer says nothing would be gained from an autopsy of the head. The only result would be that any shot Dora had at a second life would be gone. It's sci-fi. It's fantastical. To Alan, it's ridiculous. But with a shock, he realizes the judge is listening.
The court finds that the coroner threatens to thaw the remains of the decedent in cryonic suspension at the Alcor Foundation, which act would be in violation of the rights of the decedents.
Then rules in Alcor's favor that we cannot retrieve the head.
Alan gets up to leave.
I walked out very quickly as soon as the judge made his ruling. I didn't want to be in the courtroom any longer and was just so pissed off when I left. I knew that this case was going to be difficult to move forward and have any success at convicting anybody.
The mood at Alcor is quite the opposite. They're feeling confident. So confident that one person in the ranks decides to poke the bear. Alan is at work when he receives a copy of a letter. It's anonymous, but the writer threatens everybody who works on the case. They even say that when cryonics comes to be perfected, that the Riverside Coroner's Office would take their place in history, right next to slave owners.
Ouch.
And then they seal it with the final line. In the meantime, have a nice life, Mother Melters.
Mother Melters? That is incredible.
Mother Melters 0, Cryonicists 1. Dora Kent's head is safe with Alcor.
And Mike Darwin has prevented the coroner's office from taking away the chance that at some point, maybe, just maybe, she can come back to life. And as for Mike, if he can hold off death, that horrible thing he saw take his cousin when he was just a kid, then that's worth it. And he's not the only one looking for hope, because he's about to cross paths with Lawrence Pilgrim.
The guy who dropped dead on the sidewalk?
Yup. And Lawrence needs Mike's help to save the person he loves.
Aww.
But this love story is going to come with consequences that will tear two families apart.
How could you be so cold as to just want to use her as one of your science experiments?
He says, I'm dirty. I won't repeat what he said. They lied to me.
We don't let people go if they clearly do want to do this, and we'll fight to the end if that's clearly their wishes.
These guys need to be dealt with for the safety and good of everybody. That maybe we can get them shut down.
And he said, no, no, they want it bad enough that they'll take you. They would take the devil himself.
That's coming up on this season of Frozen Head.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Frozen Head ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is episode 1 of 6 of Frozen Head, a series about life, death, and what comes next. Frozen Head is hosted by me, Elena Urquhart.
And me, Ash Kelly. Senior producer is Julia Lowry Henderson. Producer is Chris Siegel. Associate producer is Malachi Wade. Senior reporter is Zachary Stauffer.
Fact-checking by Jacqueline Coletti. Managing producers are Lutha Pundia and Olivia Weber.
Sound design, mixing, and additional music by Michelle Macklem. Music supervisor is Scott Velasquez for Free Sound Sync.
Executive producers are George Lavender, Marshall Louie, and Jen Sargent for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.